Drink in the shoulder.
All right, ladies. Up, 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 up. This is Jason Albert, and it's also the 50th episode of Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. As a made it to 50 milestone, we wanted to go big, and really no one is bigger than Norway's Marit Bjørgen in the sport of cross-country skiing. She retired this past April after becoming the most decorated Winter Olympian with 15 medals. And also, as it is with this athlete, there are so many accolades. The 26 World Championship medals and the 114 World Cup victories. There's also the methodical training from her low volume and high intensity plan to her transition mid-career to a high volume and lower intensity program. During the latter part of her career, she had the ability to ski away from the world's best cross-country skiers and redefine her own limits of success. She capped her career with her recent 5-medal performance in Pyeongchang and a 7th 30K Holmenkollen title, all while being a mom. And we also wanted to take a moment and mention this 50th episode is supported by Fisher Sports, founded long before Bjørgen, way back in 1924. On to the interview. You're obviously a very well-decorated athlete, and we could go on and on about all the medals, the victories, and so forth. But I think here in the United States, and I know in Canada as well, we hear a little bit about how you grew up and how you got involved with skiing. And it's through the announcers for British Eurosport. And, you know, they talk about how you were raised on a farm. You know, I'm kind of curious, how were you raised and where were you raised as a young child? And how did you get involved with skiing?
I grew up in Rognes. It's a small place, very small place. It's about 250 people is living there. I was growing up on a farm with my family. I have one brother and one sister. My parents was very young when I was born. They was 19 and 21, so they was very young. And they had us, and they also take over the farm in the same year. But my mother was low in sports. She was playing handball. And my father, he was using the nature. He was hunting. So the both of my parents was loving to go skiing in the nature. And that was taking me and my brother and sister out, and we enjoy it, and I enjoying to use my body. So I think, I had fun to skiing, and I was also playing football and handball when I was younger. I was loving to use the body and feel the enjoying the sports, and it's also the get my friends in the sports also. So also to be born in the farm, it's helped me to be very strong. We was we have to do a walk at the farm with my parents, and I think that also helped me to be that athlete I have been. I have an active mother and father, and using the woods and the nature, and allowing, and my parents also allowing to be with me in my sports also, and was driving me on the training and was with me when I was racing, skiing, and they enjoyed to be together with me when also I do the sports. So
just so I'm correct here, it sounded like you grew up in a very small town, and I think you said something like 250 people, is that correct?
250 people.
Wow.
It's a small, very small place.
And what sort of access to skiing did you have? You know, I'm assuming like most of Norway, there were groomed trails around, but was that accessible to you in your small town?
Yeah, my father was doing mega tracks with the scooters. I don't know.
Yeah, like a snow machine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did. Yeah, and we also make skiing without tracks also. but my father was helping me when I was a little bit older to make a good condition to train on. We had tracks, of course, yeah.
And were you someone at a young age who was winning all the local races?
Yeah.
And yeah. Looking for, yeah?
Yeah.
How about, did you beat all the boys as well?
I was beating someone, but not everyone. But I was much bigger and maybe also stronger than that the other girls in my age in when I was young. But when I was 15, 16, they also getting stronger. And I think that's... Yeah, when I was 16, I was beating in Norway for the first time, I think, yeah.
Okay. Did you have to, I'm assuming that you would have to travel all through, you know, to get better competition, travel to Oslo or Lillehammer or different regions of Norway. How expensive was that for someone like you back in your teenage years to make that work?
Yeah, but I was racing around my home place, around Trondheim, around like small places around Trondheim when I was from 7 to 15 years. So that was not long traveling, and it's not expensive either. So But I was enjoying to skiing and I was winning, but I don't have the feeling that I have to go other place in Norway to match other girls on a high level. For me, I was enjoying skiing and had fun, and yeah. And when I was 15, it was like a national races with for 15 and 14 and 15 years. When you are that, you can have a national race that everyone in Norway is racing, and that maybe you have to, maybe it was close to Trondheim sometimes, and sometimes it was a longer way, but it was no problem. It was one weekend in the year, so it was not so expensive like that. So my parents was with me and my trainer also, so it was not that expensive, and we could do it. So,
and did you primarily ski with a club when you were young, or did you ski with a couple of friends and then travel the races? You know, I'm curious how that might work. And I know also in Norway that it's very focused around clubs.
Yeah, I was in Rognes. That was my club, was Rognes, and it was only me and my brother and one other boy who was racing. So it's a small club actually, and I've been standing in my club Rognes for every year, and I'm still standing there. So
who waxed the skis for you guys with such a small club?
Yeah, it was a friend of my parents who was my trainer, and he hadn't, on that time he hasn't a child by himself, but he was loving skiing and he really wanted to be with us, and he was training us, and he also made the skis. So it was one man in the club who was doing everything. So, and also my parents, my mom is also waxing the skis also, so I get lots of help from her too.
There's obviously been a lot of interest in the Norwegian teams. You know, they've both the men and women have been very successful. I think also there's been a lot of interest since the U.S. women in particular have been successful, trying to compare, like, what are people doing here in the U.S. compared to what people might be doing in Norway. So that said, how much crossover is there between the Norwegian women's and the men's teams? And, you know, what are some of the similarities and differences that you've seen between the two?
I feel it's not that big difference. Of course, that the boys are slightly stronger than our women. But I think many of the Norwegian girls on the team is actually training more than some of the boys in the men's team. I think also maybe the strongest side on the ladies team that we have been training together and pushing each other and learn from each other. I think it's one of our secrets. I think that make out the good team that we have in the ladies. And I think also the boys have learned a little bit about that, that to train together and and help each other to be on a higher level. I think that's when you do that, everyone is getting higher, and then you are also getting on a high level. I think it's one of the secrets on our team. And I also think that's one of the reason that the USA women also have been doing so well the last years. I think that's also the reason that they are in high level now.
When you first were emerging on the World Cup scene around 2000, was the Norwegian women's team still, the word I would use is cohesive, like it is today, you know, training together, learning from one another? Or was it, you know, Marit might be training here, another athlete over, you know, a couple of hundred kilometers away? Or has it always been a good team unit?
I feel that it always has been a good team spirit. I think when I was in the national team after World Champion in Lahti 2001, one of my trainers, Svante Rosander, was the coach then, and I think he wanted that everyone training together, that when we was in training camp and doing the same. I think he wanted that, and I think we all started when I was in the national team, and of course it has been better and better. And I think also the last 8 years has been very good for the Norwegian team. So
here in the U.S., what we see of the Norwegian women in particular, like the last maybe 5-6 years, is that they're very close. Very much. And is there something about that has made you quite successful just in the past 5-6 years?
Yes. One of them, it's that reason. I think that we had a high level. Many of the girls is in a high level, and I think also motivates me to push and train hard to be also in a high level. When you came on a training camp, and you always get the answer how you are standing, because you knew that some of the girls is one of the best in the world on skis, and you always get the answer how you are standing. And of course, and to training with them, and when the younger girls are beating me, I know that I have to do the work better and harder. And of course, without them, maybe I'm not having the years I have in the last 8 years. Of course, I'm happy to be with the girls I have around me the last 8 years. And of course, that's one of the reasons. And also the training I've done also at home, of course. But that they have motivated me, and of course they have pushing me. And I always know that if they beat me, I know that I have to do the work better. So of course, I think it's important to have a strong team around you.
So speaking about this whole, you know, the concept of team, which the U.S. women talk about quite a bit, you know, what are your observations? What has it been like to see, you know, Keegan come on the scene and win 3 Sprint Globes to this year in the Olympics, where, You know, Jesse Diggins skied every race, was a medal contender in many races, you know, distance, and obviously won a gold in the team sprint with Keegan. What has that been like for you to observe, you know, a country that's known for basketball and baseball come onto the cross-country scene the way they have?
Yeah, I'm really happy that we have the, like, Keegan and Jesse, and especially Jesse have been very strong this year. I think, I mean, that's very important for our sports, and I was really, really happy that it was Keegan and Jesse who was winning the team relay. Of course, we wanted the gold, but we knew that if it wasn't us, I'm happy that it was the USA girls, because I think it's important for our sports, and I think we need other nations for, of course, of the interesting on for the cross country, and to the cross country to live longer. I think if it's only Norwegian or Sweden, it could be boring, and maybe the cross country, will go away from some years. I'm happy and glad to see other girls and other nations who's being on the high level. So I was really happy for them, actually.
I'll go back to the question, which is asked a lot in the media, and it's asked oftentimes during the Olympics and during world championships, but this whole idea of, you know, is Norway winning too much?
Yeah.
You know, is that something you guys, you talk about as teammates? And you just spoke about this a little bit. It's that if Norway is dominating all the time, global interest diminishes a bit.
Yeah, of course, we get that question of many times. And of course, we need other nations up there, but we can't not train lesser to make that to happen. So it's like when you see in Kenya, they are very good to run, and in the championship or Olympic, you can see maybe many of Kenya is in front. And I think that's more important for us to talk about what we're doing in Norway and maybe learn something to the other nation to get them on a high level, because I think we can do the training lesser to get them to other nations to come after. So yeah, I think in Norway the cross country is very interesting, and we have lots of recreation, and many younger are looking up to us. We have Petter Northug, we have Johannes Klæbo, we have Therese, and to have that big stars in Norway get also that many of the younger is training and also want and have dreams in the future, and then they know that how to do it and how much do they have to train. And and I think for us it's that important to maybe to learn and tell about what we're doing in Norway to the other nations.
Hey folks, a quick interruption here. We just wanted to give another shout and tell you this episode of Nordic Nation is supported by Fischer Sports, based in Austria, products available globally. Okay, back to Bjørgen. So this year at Holmenkollen, presumably it's your last 30K race at Holmenkollen, at least as a World Cup athlete. It was quite an event here in the United States. It's you know, for people who are fans of the sport, Holmenkollen is almost bigger than the Olympics sometimes.
Yeah.
And Jesse had a great race.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, what was going through your mind as that race transpired and it looked like she might get away with it?
I was thinking that I was fighting for a fourth or fifth place when we was going out for the last round. For last 8.3 kilometers, but I heard that I was taken second, and for the other, And I also knew that I had changed keys, and I knew that also that the other girls didn't haven't. And I heard that it was, I was closer and closer. I didn't think it, I had the chance, but I pushed hard, and yeah, I was closer and closer, and I think in the last kilometers I just passed them, and I can see that yeah, I was much better, and yeah, I will. Of course, I in the middle of the race I thought that I was fighting for a 4th to 5th place, and I think the most important I was doing there was that I was changing skis in the middle of the race. I think that have the other girls done that, maybe they have the chance to do it. So I think that's what was my secret that day.
Is that something that you think is just from experience, having the cool to take a moment and switch skis and know that you can still fight?
Yeah, I think I never give up. I just pushing, and you never know. And I also knew that 30K is fitting me well, and you never know what's happening in the in the last 5 kilometers. And yeah, I was heard that I was taking second. Yeah, I was trying to do my best, and and in the last 3 kilometers, I knew that it could be possible, and then I was fighting more. Then, of course, I was also tired, but I think it was more motivation for me to come behind and take second than be in the front and hear that someone is coming behind you. So, yeah.
I'm trying to think. So a year ago in 2017 in Oslo, I think it was a 30K classic.
Yeah.
And you were, I think it was a really foggy day, and you were way, way in front.
Yeah.
I think maybe several minutes in front and by yourself.
Yeah.
Does it depend on the race, or are you someone who prefers to be way out in front and dominate like that? Or like in 2018, where you're working from behind and everybody else up front knows that Marit Bjørgen is a hunter?
I have never win like race that I was doing in March in this year. I have never done it like in this way. So I feel that it was, yeah, it was great to win like that also. But I also like to be going in the front and feel very strong, and and everyone is cheering on you, and yeah, you can enjoy the last kilometers. I also like that, but it was also very interesting to win a race like I was doing this year also.
Well, they're both fun to watch, and it's always, you know, watching you in 2017. You were so far ahead that I kept on asking myself, like, are you even working hard? I mean, I know you're working hard, but you're dominating so much that it appears that you're on just a completely different level.
I was working hard, but I think also the other girls didn't try from the beginning. I think if they had tried to follow me in the beginning, maybe some of the other girls have followed me. But I think they have too much respect for me on that point of in March in 2017. So I think that they didn't try, actually.
If you were coaching an athlete and there was someone else as dominant out there like you, there seems to be like a fine balance between respect, but at the same time, you want people to take risks. What would you tell an athlete who is skiing against someone like yourself, you know, if you were coaching an athlete like that in the future?
Yeah. I wanted them to try, actually. I like the athlete who has no respect. Yeah, I wanted to coach that you have to try to follow. And yeah, if it's better to try than not to try, I mean.
I have a couple of questions here that it's come up quite a bit in the news media here in the United States about body image. And Jesse Diggins spoke recently in an essay just about disclosing that she had struggled with an eating disorder when I believe she was in high school. You know, I'm curious, you know, what is that conversation like in Norway when it comes to female athletes and how they should or should not, you know, eat or train, and that issue of becoming, you know, too lightweight or too skinny, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I understand. Of course, we have also in Norway, like some athletes that have some problem with eating disorder, and I think it always be an issue in, especially in endurance sport. But on our team, we have always doctor and team around and watching every athlete and following up and having some tests that your body is good to do the work and the training that you have to do to be on a high level. So I think it always will be an issue in like sport like cross country or running or
Do the doctors on the sorry, go ahead.
We have a doctor and a team around us who's following up everyone every year.
Would the Norwegian team have plans or a protocol if an athlete, you know, male or female? If the body mass index indicated that there might be some eating disorder, would the Norwegian team have a protocol to keep someone from racing?
Yeah, they then you don't have the law to race or go to a training camp. You have to stay at home then. And of course, you have a team who's following up. And yeah, you have to be fresh to be competing again or to be on a training camp. I think if the body is too low, you don't get allowed to race or to train. So
let's kind of change a little bit to talk about your training. And there's been a lot of interest in endurance sport about, you know, what does Mara Bjørgen do to stay, one, so fit, to be able to, in many years, be consistent throughout the entire World Cup. And then as you've evolved as an athlete, to be able to peak for, you know, events like World Championships in 2017 in Lahti or the 2018 Olympics. So there's been a lot of interest in what you've done over the course of your career. I think it's fair to say, like, by your mid-20s, your career or your results plateaued a little bit. Can you describe what your training methods were like early in your career compared to the latter part of your career?
I think in when I was younger, to up to 22, 23, I was training like everyone. It's lots of training, slow training, and some intervals in the week, maybe 2-3 intervals. But from 2003 to 2009, I was training lots of intervals, like you know Helgerud.
Yep.
And I have doing his training method from 2003 to 2009, and I was training very lots of intervals in periods. It could be on of 2 weeks. I could train 18 intervals.
Wow!
So it was some days 2 intervals, and I could have like this in 3-4 months like this. I think that gives me good results in 2005 in Oberstdorf. I think it helped me on the oxygen. I was getting higher oxygen, like O2, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, your VO2 max was bumped up?
Yeah, yep. It was getting higher from 2003 to 2006. And I think that was the reason that I was getting the results in Oberstdorf in 2005. But after, from the Olympic in Torino 2006 to 2009 in Liebrecht, I had my results was up and down. I was winning sometimes, and the day after I could do a bad race again. So it was, the results was up and down. And I think that's the reason that my body was not recovering after for many hard intervals and races. I think it was too hard intervals and the racing. And I was coming to the world champion in Liebrecht 2009, and that I was hoping to get some medals there, but I didn't. I was far away, and then I understand that should I stop skiing or should I training different from I was doing. And I thought that I haven't not shown how good I could be on skiing, so I understand that I have to change my training. Then I will see how it's gone. And from 2000 in the spring 2009, I was changing everything. I was training many hours, but lots of slow training, and the body was recovering, and I feel that my legs was better and things was working much better than had been in the last 3 years. So, and that also gives me results in Vancouver, and that I understand that the difference from the training to train very hard. My body was tired after so many years with hard intervals and everything, and I had to change to train slow training, but lots of training, and that's helped me.
Yes, when we hear, it's interesting because when we hear about slow training, what does that mean to you? I mean, I often hear it's like walking hills.
Yeah, it's like running slow, or you're you can speak when you're running or skiing. It's very slow training. It's like I didn't the highest pulse. It was 130.
Okay.
I wasn't higher than that on the slow training.
And what would be your max, like your max pulse at that time?
My max was 173.
And when you switched, when you were having difficulties, I think you mentioned in Liebrecht or after Liebrecht, you were thinking you needed a change.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were the people that are advising you? You know, it's like you are a prized athlete in Norway and no one wants to make a mistake, in terms of how you evolve as an athlete, I'm assuming. You know, who do you trust to guide you into making those changes like that?
I was trusting myself. My trainer on this time, he was telling that I should change before, because I was changing trainer after 2006, after Torino. And he wanted me to change, but I didn't, because I knew that training I do at that gives me also results in obstacles. So, but I have to, when I was coming to after Liebrecht in 2009, I understand myself that I have to change. And I think that was the most important, that I understand it by myself. And also with my trainer, he's supporting me at that time. And I think I learned a lot of what I do in that 3 years. And after also that, I myself understand that I had to change the training.
It's interesting because we think about, here in the United States, some of the athletes that I would compare you to in terms of stature would be like, you know, LeBron James, who's like world famous, obviously is an incredible athlete.
Yeah.
But he has to have, I'm guessing, has to have people around him that can that can say no, that can challenge him. Does that make sense? You know,
I think, yeah. But you have to believe it by yourself. I think.
Yeah.
I have to come to after Limre 2009, and I understand myself that I have to change the training to come back again and to be on a high level. And of course, my trainer at that time, he was supporting me, and we make a good plan from the spring to Vancouver. And that we had a plan that I have believe on. That was the most important, I think. And that my trainer is there to discussion how we do it. And that he also support me.
What would you tell, you know, a young athlete who, you know, is 16, 17, 18, and is quite good about how they should go about training effectively? I mean, you've had experience with a high intensity model, like lower volume, higher intensity.
Yeah.
And the model of higher volume and less frequent intensity. How would you advise an athlete looking to get better?
Yeah, I think it's no facet how we do it. I think I will not be out of the training I was doing in 2003 to 2006. It was giving me higher oxygen, O2.
Mm-hmm.
And but I should have changed the training earlier than I was doing in 2009. So I think you can do both, but maybe not training so hard for many, many years, I don't think. So you have to find out what's best for you and which athlete you are. I think for me, I was from the beginning, I was a sprinter. I was fast on the short distance. I was a lot of muscles are strong, and I think for me it was also important to train intervals to get higher oxygen or O2. So I think that's also, it gave me a lift on my career. Of course it does. So it's hard to tell. I think you have to find out what's fitting you well, I think. But I think to be on a high level in cross country, of course, you have to train a lot, I think. For me, my best years has been from I was 30 to 38. So, yeah, but I haven't been without the hard training either. So I think it's given me a lift on my career.
So you've seen, you know, almost two decades of World Cup skiing. And, you know, I'm curious what your thoughts on are, you know, and how the sport has evolved or how you would like to see it evolve.
It will be interesting. Well, the cross country skiing is about 10 years and how is the snow condition? And I think to get the replacement, you have to have snow. Many places. I think that's important. So it's hard to know, actually. And I think for the World Cup to make snow, it's going forward. And I think that's no problem. But if we don't have any athletes, younger athletes who can train at their home place, it will be hard to get some new athletes. And then it's interesting. We'll see what's happening with the cross country.
So here's a question about classic skiing in particular. So I think it was the women's 30K in Pyeongchang.
Yeah.
And I was standing at the top of the long hill that came out of the stadium.
Yeah.
And you can stride it. And, you know, I actually took my phone out. I think at that point you were off the front by yourself. And
yeah.
I took some video of you striding, and then I took some video of some people coming up behind. The technique difference was amazing to watch. You know, I go back every once in a while and I look at the video of you and I look at the video of the other athletes. One is you didn't look very tired. You were very smooth. And I think people reference you quite a bit here in the United States and Canada, and I'm sure all over the globe, about how beautiful your classic technique is.
Yeah.
That said, what are your thoughts on the movement towards, you know, double poling and double poling more of a course and taking away from maybe what the beautiful pieces of classic skiing are?
I don't want to have only double poling. I want to, the classic part will stay because, yeah, I am born with it and I also like it. And it's beautiful to see athletes who is racing very good classic. So I hope it will stand there in the future also. Yeah, I like that we have some races that we have to go diagonal and not just double pulling. So, but it's hard to know about the development in the future, what's happening. But I like the cross country and like it's done today. But what the younger athletes want, it's hard to know actually. So, but yeah, I am growing up with that, and for me it was I like classic from the beginning. I was not a skater in my when I was younger, so I always like classic. So.
So you are obviously a mom. What advice would you give someone wanting to start a family, but also continue to race at a high level?
I think it's of course it's possible, but when I think about what I have done and after I have been a mom, I am also happy that I have done everything. Yeah, what I have done before I get Marius also. Because the two last years, it has been an incredible performance in Lahti and also in Pyeongchang. But it has been very hard, actually. And I think if you want to do it, you have to have a good team around you. My husband hasn't been working the last 2 years. He has been staying at home for taking care of my son and Marius, that I could of course that I could train two times in the day, but also to have the chance to recover. And I think it has been very hard, so I'm also happy that I have done lots of my career also before I get Marius. But I think it's possible, of course, but you have to have a very good team around you. And it will be not easy. In the last 2 years for me, I have to only be focused on training and to be with Marius and nothing else. So it has been tough also, but I'm glad that I have also done it. But also we are happy that I have done a good career before Marius came off.
Did you? I mean, I have two children, and I'm sure every parent can speak about sleepless nights.
Yeah.
Did you have nights where literally you would get a few hours sleep and then have to go out and train? I mean, was that common for you, or were you able to manage that?
I had some. It was hard to plan the training in the week because you never know what's happening. But I also had my husband, he was sleeping with him in the night, so I could have my sleeping to, because that, I think that was also important to get high level on the training I was doing the day after. So my husband was taking the night, and I think that was important. But you never know when your child is sick or something happened. It was, it's that many weeks that I have done actually what I wanted to do in the training. It always will be something changing. You are tired, or Marius was sick, or something else happening. So it was almost hard, but I was getting a lot of help from my husband, and I think without him, I haven't made it, of course.
Is that fairly common in Norway for, you know, a male to take on that role? I mean, it sounds like you made a very wise choice in terms of your partner. You know, is that something that is a usual occurrence, the dad staying home or the dad being the primary caregiver for a few years?
It's not normal in Norway, but we were talking about that before Marius came in. We wanted a child, but I also wanted to competing, and he say you can start competing after I will stay home with my son. And I think that we have a deal, and we was a good team together. That was important. Of course, it don't mean that they had to be the father. It could be you had a nanny or something else to be there. But for me, it was great to have my husband there and the father of my child there too. So, and he is also glad that he had lots of time with Marius. So,
you know, how do you plan to sort of incorporate outdoor lifestyle and specifically skiing with your own child or children?
I want to ski with him, but I also think it's important that I am there for him and that he chooses what he wants to do, but I support him in everything. If he wants to play football, I support him on that. If he wants skiing, I'm very happy for that, but maybe you don't want to do sports. So that was for sure important for me when I was young, that I could choose by myself what I wanted to do, and I have my parents who are supporting me, and I will also do the same to Marius. And maybe I will not be a skier, but maybe in other sports or something, but I will be there for supporting him what he wants to do. So that's what I am thinking.
So, you know, when I was looking up, you know, I made the mistake of going on the FIS site and pulling up the result sheet for you. And it's obviously very long. And it, you know, from looking at all the statistics from a journalistic perspective, it seems very difficult to pick out any highlight because there's so many.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular moment as an athlete that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life?
Oh, yeah. I guess that's a question a lot of time, but I think it's hard to choose. Of course it is. But I am happy, really happy to end my career like I did with the 30K in Pyeongchang. I'm happy for that race. I feel that the year was a little bit challenging. And the Olympic was the biggest goal for me, and that to finish like I did in the 30K was very big for me. But also the first individual gold in Vancouver in the sprint was also very important, because I was, there has been some tough years, and I didn't know if I could come back again on a high level, but I really did. And to get the first indoor was special also. So, and of course, the world champion in Oslo was very important for me. So, but yeah, it's hard to choose one. Everyone is special, and I of course remember every for sure Olympic and world champion.
I remember, I think it was the press conference after the 30K, your 30K victory.
No.
Where you kept open the possibility of, you didn't come outright and say, you know, state I'm retiring.
Yeah.
And you talked a little bit like, well, maybe, just maybe I'll come back for world championships in 2019. Yeah. After, you know, what made you kind of think after the 30K, it's like you weren't maybe ready yet?
I was I knew that I was stopping after this year then. But I don't wanted to tell nobody before the season was finished. So because of then you get lots of questions and yeah, oh, you will be here for the last time and everything like that. So I really don't wanted to tell before I was finished waiting. So that was important for me.
Okay.
So yeah, I knew it before the Olympic. Yeah, okay. I knew that I was my last. Yeah, I did.
That makes sense. That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you'd have to ask, like, say, Jesse Diggins and Keegan, because they're on a totally different level, in particular Jesse right now, than any U.S. skier ever. That said, I'm sure you probably get an incredible amount of attention in the European media, in particular in Norway. What has that been like for you to be someone who grew up in a small town, the daughter of, you know, sounds like very earthy people.
Yeah.
To grow up as an adult, like with all this scrutiny, like why are you winning or why are you not winning?
Yeah.
You know, how has that been dealing with the media?
It's in the beginning, it was hard and tough because, I was, of course, winning in 2005 and 2006, and then the result was not so good, and maybe I was second place, and the Norwegian media was wondering what's happening, and I think I was, I was happy with the second place, but when I come to the Norwegian media, they was wondering what's happening, and then I said, oh, this is not good enough, and it was some years there, it was very tough, and but after 2009, I was also working with a faculty, we also did the work at the Norwegian, to the media, that I was, thinking about what's the best for me and not what's best for them, and what I wanted to tell the Norwegian people. So, but of course, in Norway, you have you been on a high level? You have to be there, or you are not good enough. In the Norwegian media, it's hard with you. But I think I have been in for this for 20 years, and I have learned to how I was managed it. So for the last 8 years, it has been not a problem because. I always think about what I want and what's best for me, and have decided me before I go to the media and what I want to tell them. So, of course, in Norway, I'm happy also that we have the Norwegian media. Its population in Norway is very big, and that gives us also a sponsor to do that we wanted to do, and then we need the media also, so that you have to learn how to take it.
What is next for you? You know, career path or opportunities that you might look forward to in the next few years?
Yeah, I'm not sure what I want to do. Now I work with one of my sponsors with a little bit training and telling about how to be in the sport and how we work to be on a high level. But I will, take some time and figure out what I want to do. Maybe I will go to the school or I want to do something else. It's early to say. It's only 4 or 5 months since I quit skiing, and skiing has been 20 years of my life, so I have to use some time to figure out what I want to do. So
sure, I mean, you've earned that, so
yeah, thanks.
Okay, so last question is, we hear this quite a bit in the North American cross-country media when a Norwegian athlete is asked how the shape is, they say the shape is good. How do you say, like, the shape is good in Norwegian?
Formen bra.
How is your shape right now?
It has been better. I haven't been not that much training after I stopped, so the motivation to train has been a little bit hard, and I hope it will be better when we came to the winter, so I could skiing again. Yeah.
Are you gonna will you jump in any like citizens races or any races around Norway?
No, I haven't been races. I don't think I will be racing either in the winter. I just want to skiing and have fun with that. And yeah, I'm finished with competition.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Have a good evening. And I'm assuming, is it still light where you are right now?
Yeah, it's still a little bit light, but it's getting dark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I know it was, I was like, ooh, okay, I don't know what time she goes to bed. This could be late. Okay, thanks, Marit, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Take a Bow episode with Marit Bjørgen.